It's winner-take-all time in the NBA and NHL, and FanDuel's giving you a shot to bring home a big win of your own. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. That's $150 to bet on spreads, money lines, player props, and more. Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan and make every playoff shot count. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and it is WrestleMania week across the world in the WWE and right here on TIJ as well. We're celebrating the WWE's biggest night, the biggest show of the year, this Sunday in Orlando with two very special guests tonight, right here, right now, doing a solo appearance. I got Big Cass coming up on the show. He's getting ready for his huge ladder match, triple threat, him and Enzo Amore versus Gallows and Anderson versus Sheamus and Cesaro. And it's going to be one of the highlights of the show. I'm sure ladder matches always are in WrestleMania. But we've had Enzo's been on before, Talking Shop live in Mexico. He's been on. They've been on a lot of podcasts together, but I wanted to get Big Cass coming up all by himself. But like I said, Big Cass is here. He's talking about his personal journey, not only to WrestleMania, this is his first this year, by the way, but also to the WWE. You're going to hear how he and Enzo Amore got teamed up, where some of those crazy catchphrases came from. Soft, S-A-W-F-T, soft, how you doing? And the latest, who do we got over here? A couple of haters. He's 7 foot tall, and you can't teach that. And we found out also how they made the main roster. Big Cass also does a great Dusty Rhodes impression. Excellent. Talks about all the help that Dusty gave him at NXT. Cass also has some hilarious stories from Dusty's promo class and the stuff that Cass and Enzo used to do in NXT to get noticed. Plus, Cass and his dad used to go to all the big WWE shows in New York, New Jersey, etc., etc. when Cass was growing up. So he was at SummerSlam 2002 and even brought a homemade sign to the arena. And he also brought a homemade sign to the arena for The Rock when I was his big rival. So Cass, you know, you're in big trouble, man. Hey, you're big trouble, man. So Big Cass is going to be here. Lots of great stories. A lifelong wrestling fan, a lifelong Springsteen fan. And he's a really great guy as well. And you can't teach that. But before we get to Big Cass, got another great story. It's got to be Diamond Dallas Page's induction into the WWE Hall of Fame, officially happening this Friday night in Orlando. Couldn't be happier for him. He's a great guy. He's helped me a lot in my life, and you know he can help you in yours. And to mark the incredible occasion of Dallas going in the WWE Hall of Fame, he's holding a special Hall of Fame sale at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Dallas is being inducted, but you are reaping the rewards, man. He's so fired up about the Hall of Fame. He's giving you 30% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDPY-related merch. So celebrate with DDP by jumping on board the DDPY program and living a healthier life. You guys have heard me talk about what DDP Yoga has done for me, and you're really going to hear it when the new Fozzy album comes out very soon. You're going to hear it in my singing, because singing comes from the core. I'm stronger and more powerful than ever, and DDP had a lot to do with that because he's really helped strengthen my core. You've seen the year I've had in WWE as well, and that's why I'm the hashtag 61 minute man. Definitely DDP Yoga helped me get to that point. Very excited about my big match versus Kevin Owens this Sunday, and DDPY is going to help me stay in the game bigger and better than ever. I do DDP yoga wherever I want, man. I just open up the app, get to work wherever I am, backstage at a venue, in the dressing room, in a hotel room, in my living room. That app makes it so easy. It's so easy. And it's got a whole new set of workouts on it, so you never get bored. The app's also got tips for healthy eating and recipes to keep you on target. It's everything you need to live a healthier life. All right. Like I said, you get 30% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all related merch at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's 30% off hats. How you doing? T-shirts. How you doing? Yoga mats. How you doing? Heart monitors. How you doing? So much more. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. It's the biggest sale ever on the DDPY program. So take advantage of it, man. Celebrate Dallas's much deserved induction into the WWE Hall of Fame and get on the path to healthier living at the same time. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. One more time. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Change your life today. Get in the best physical and mental shape of your whole entire life and start right now.
Talk is Jericho.
So basically, straight off the plane after hours and hours of flying, Big Cass is here. We're in Dusseldorf, Germany. And how you feel? Are you a little bit jet lagged?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
You even have the voice, like you just kind of got up voice.
Oh, yeah. We had the LAX flight to JFK. Then we napped for like 4 hours in Queens. And then JFK to here. So,
but aren't you from Queens?
I'm from Queens.
Did you go home?
I didn't go home because I actually called my mom and said, hey, should I come by the house and come by the house to sleep and take a nap? But she's like, oh, no. The traffic, the construction, get out of here. Just stay over there at JFK. So I didn't end up going home.
Even though you're in your own backyard.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
If people only knew that, like I said, like we were laughing, kind of were drinking coffee. And like I woke up, I got here yesterday. I took a direct from L.A. And, dude, you know, you land, and it's like, okay, I'm all right. And then you have that little sleep, and then I'm so, like, zoned out, buzzed, tired, and I haven't drank anything. But it's hard. Like, people don't know we land here, and I had an extra day's sleep, but you landed here this morning, and we're going straight to work in about 2 hours to wrestle.
Yeah, we have the show tonight, 7 o'clock in Dusseldorf.
Dusseldorf.
And then did you see the schedule for after the show? Six-hour bus ride.
Really?
To Nuremberg. 6 hours.
Now, when you first started traveling and then knowing you for a little bit, you like having like a certain amount of sleep.
Well, if I can get it in, yeah.
Right, but now it's starting to change. Because before, it was always like, you know, I need 8 hours sleep. That's
yes.
The way it is.
Yeah, especially in NXT when I was sleeping in my bed every night, 8 hours, ideal, yeah.
Right, but I was telling you, dude, when we started traveling.
Well, that ain't going to work anymore.
Because you said you couldn't sleep on planes.
Oh, yeah, that's my biggest issue is no matter what I do, like no matter what I drink or whatever, like whatever I take, like a melatonin or a NyQuil or anything, I cannot sleep on airplanes, man. It's just, especially for what we're doing, it's so frustrating because man, like everyone else, I look around, the rest of the boys and the girl, they're all passed out, like getting good rest while we're flying overseas. And I'm just sitting there watching Modern Family and South Park, and I just can't fall asleep, man.
Did you, even on this trip, you didn't fall asleep at night?
I fell asleep for like 20 minutes maybe, but I wasn't in a real sleep. That's usually what happens. If people say, oh, I looked at you and you were asleep, I'm just
now, that's thinking. The worst. That's frustrating, man.
Yeah.
Like, that'll change. For you, it's going to have to because you spent so much time on planes and stuff. But there's nothing worse than when you got that kind of half-assed sleep and you're not getting any type of rest that you need. And you got an 8-hour flight or 6-hour flight or whatever it was for you guys.
Yeah, it was like 8 hours over here
from
JFK. Yeah, something like that.
It's funny because I was on Air Berlin and there was like this real dog's breakfast of movies that were on the plane. There was really nothing new. And like the best offering was Gold Member, Austin Powers Gold Member.
Dude, I like that movie.
It's great, but it's like of all the movies, like I go under comedies and it's all these like not really comedies and then Gold Member.
Yeah.
And it's like that's my choices. It's like Everlynn, you gotta ramp it up, dudes.
Yeah, I saw that too because I was looking at our movie choices. I immediately went from movie choices to TV. I was like, oh, this is.
That was smart because the TV's always better.
Yeah, I was like, this is slim pickings here. So I went over to TV and South Park, Modern Family, stuff like that.
It gets pretty bad like when you start knowing the airlines. Like Air Berlin, we've never had. But I know like Delta, they'll have the same movies on the way back as they do the way there.
Yeah.
Which is a total burnout because like, if you got a long flight, you watch the two or three that you want to see on there.
Yep.
And then coming back, it's like, well, now I really got, you know, like gold members.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all there's left.
Well, gonna have to watch gold member. I got to the point where on some of these like airlines in the States now, I know what movies they have. Because, you know, the airlines in the States now, they also have the headrest TV.
Yeah, the TV and the headrest, yeah. Right, which is
so
great.
Like, so, like, I had to, like, download the Accountant because I want to watch that movie, but I knew, like, oh, Delta, the Accountant's no longer available on Delta flights. Like, you start to know what shows,
right.
What episodes. Oh, Ballers, I'm going to have to download the next season of season two of Ballers because they took it off of American flights. Like, you know what's on each flight.
I would never watch Comic Book Men on AMC that Kevin Smith was like a Pawn Stars, they do with comic book shops. Like, hey, I've got this 1972 Superman doll. How much is it worth?
Right.
I would never watch it. I've seen every freaking episode of that show because they have it on Delta.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's kind of interesting. I like Kevin Smith, and I know a little bit about comics. And every week or every month or whatever, they have a few new episodes. I've seen them all. Yeah. Only from flying.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
So what was it like? So when you first get – because you guys were down at NXT for a while. Then the big cast and Enzo. And was there, like, a few close calls to getting called up? Were there rumors you're going to get called up? Were you guys down there for a long time waiting to be called up?
I think everybody down there is always waiting to be – everyone's excited and, you know, waiting to be called up. But I don't think we ever really had a point where we thought, man, we're definitely going to get called up. There were some moments where we thought, maybe, like, after SummerSlam, I mean, the Barclays Center in – the first ever NXT takeover there. We were on the opening show, and we got a very good reaction from the hometown crowd in Barclays Center, and some people were talking. I don't know if there's any merit to anything that people were saying backstage, but you start thinking, oh, maybe soon. But I don't think we ever really, really got our hopes up until right around WrestleMania time. Like, we kind of figured something was going on when we did that Roadblock WWE Live, the network special. It was Ambrose versus Triple H in the main event.
Oh, yeah, in Toronto or something?
It was in Toronto. And we had a NXT Tag Team Championship match with The Revival. And after that, we weren't booked on NXT television for the next 2 months going into Mania. So we kind of thought, huh, something's probably going on here. Mm-hmm. If we're not on TV anymore, we lost to The Revival at Roadblock. We haven't been seen since. So we kind of figured something was going on. So I guess our hopes at last... last year, right around WrestleMania season, started getting pretty high.
And then when did they finally tell you?
Triple H told us after TakeOver Dallas, they had the NXT TakeOver Dallas.
Around WrestleMania.
Yeah, two nights before WrestleMania. And he pulled me and Enzo aside and told us that we were going to get called up.
How's that feel for you? I mean, obviously, we'll talk about this. You're a huge wrestling fan from a young age.
Yeah.
You know, work your way up, and now you finally get the shot.
Yeah. It was awesome. It was really emotional, but it was also a little weird, too, because they filmed it for the – I think there was a 24 about WrestleMania, and they put me and Enzo on it, getting called up. Like, that moment is on the network. Mm-hmm. So, like, when Triple H was like, hey, guys, I want to talk to you. Oh, okay, we walk into a room, and there's a camera there. We're like, oh, this is a little weird. So your reactions are kind of like subdued a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very emotional, but also at the same time, it was a little awkward because the camera guy is standing right there. You have to pretend that he's not right there.
Hey, this is great.
Yeah.
Nice job.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And where was that? Columbus? Or where were we? Dallas?
Dallas, yeah.
Dallas, the arena, right? Dallas.
Yeah.
Were you surprised at how many – well, I mean, first night after WrestleMania, there's always a lot of hardcore fans there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But were you surprised at how many people knew your shtick the moment you walked out?
I honestly wasn't surprised because I know the crowd that's there the night after Mania. Hardcore fans, a lot of fans from Europe, a lot of fans from Germany, a lot of fans from all over the world. It's that hardcore WWE fan base. So those fans are all familiar with NXT.
Mm-hmm.
So – And I went to the Knicks game that Friday night, and I was in the American Airlines Center.
Knicks versus Dallas
that Friday or Thursday. Whenever we got in with the NXT crew, and there were a lot of WWE fans there, and they were all coming up to me, Monday night, is it going to be Monday? So I was kind of expecting a very good reaction because everybody was asking about it, and it was, you know, like I said, that hardcore fan base. So,
okay, well, let me ask you this: and what about the second week and the third week when it's not the hardcore fan base, when we're in, you know, Peoria, Illinois, wherever the hell we were?
Yeah, that's where you get a little nervous. You're kind of wondering, okay, where is this going to go a few weeks from now when we don't have them? But then we started getting great reactions on house shows, even in like North Carolina and South Carolina, and like other towns across the states, like very, very tiny, small towns, you know, some of the buildings we work live events on. And we were getting good reactions in those buildings. And that's when we started to think, okay, we're going to keep rolling with this. This is, the fans really dig this.
You know, I found that was really cool about it is, you know, if you're going to call it, let's say, the sing-along promo, whatever, you guys have very right. much a fan-based, you know, sing-along with the bouncing ball type of a stuff. And to me, it's like the good thing about it is because I don't watch NXT, and that's not a bad thing. It's just, you know, time and all that other stuff. But people watched it enough to where if there was 15% of the crowd or 20% of the crowd that knew your shtick, they're singing along with it with such conviction and so into it that the other 80% are kind of like, who are these guys?
Exactly.
It must be something cool.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the night after WrestleMania debut helped us too, because there's 15,000 plus in that arena, but there's millions at home watching. And like you said, some of those fans at home are actually probably the overwhelming majority of those fans at home watching Raw on the USA Network that night. They're not familiar with us. But when they see an arena filled with 15,000 people that knew every word they were saying, mm-hmm. everybody at home starts thinking, well, who the F are these guys?
Right.
What? These guys are cool, you know, everybody's singing along with them. So I think it was just the right moment for us and just all the stars aligned, and it was like the perfect debut.
This episode is brought to you by ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. Enter ServiceNow. It puts AI to work for people, for employees, for developers, and even your customers, removing frustration and supercharging productivity. On our intelligent platform, AI isn't just a promise. It's happening today. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. To learn more, visit servicenow.com/AI for people.
Talk is Jericho.
How did that start with you guys as far as doing all the catchphrases and the quote-unquote sing-along?
Well, me and Enzo started doing promos together in Dusty Rhodes' promo class. Like, Dusty would even have us at the old FCW building in Tampa. He'd have us sit at a table, like, to the side, and everybody during promo class would go up there, and then afterwards he'd, like, flip to us. And we would cut a promo about their promo and pretty much just bury everybody sometimes. Like, just making fun of everybody, like, just burying the promo they just did. And so Dusty, you know, he was really behind us, and he was pushing for us.
We have a fine tradition on Talk is Jericho that if you, Dusty, you're talking about, you have to do a Dusty imitation of what he said to you.
But at that moment right there?
Yeah, like, what was he saying to bury these guys?
Baby, you two just, you go up there and you just, you say whatever you feel. I don't care. You don't care about hurting no feelings. You go up there and you say whatever the F you want, okay? And you could tell them Dusty told you that.
Is there one that comes to mind of somebody that you buried?
Let me see. I'm trying to think. I remember Sami Zayn and Neville were up there and they were doing like this big friendship promo, and like, Sammy was testing Neville's friendship, and he would like tell him things to see if he was actually his friend. He'd be like,
and that's a shoot too. Those guys are wacko together.
Yeah, they really are. And that was one that I remember me and Enzo were just really burying afterwards. It was really good. He was testing his friendship. I forget some of the situations he was in, but eventually Neville played the bad guy, and he was like, Sammy was like, well, I don't have any more money, so I can't pay for us going out anymore and stuff. And then I was like, all right, well, I'll see you later. Like, we're not friends anymore. And, like, he was really not his good friend. And then we just, you know, buried them for that whole problem.
Yeah. So you guys started doing that kind of insulting, rapping them.
Yeah. Whatever. Dusty compared to, who were the two guys from, is it Sesame Street? They sit up in the balcony.
From the Muppet Show.
The Muppet Show,
I think they're called Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah.
Two old guys that bury everything.
Yeah. So he compared it to that. And then.
That's great.
Yeah. We started doing that, and finally, we weren't on NXT at all. We weren't being used on the television show.
Were you guys put together already?
No, we were nothing. Like,
separate guys.
We were just put together as guys that do promos together. Mm-hmm. We didn't even work live events together. And then Enzo had a match against Mason Ryan on NXT. He went out there.
Good Lord. It's like a giant, it's like David and Goliath.
Yeah. If you could get eyes on that footage, Enzo took a beel. He almost went flying out of the ring. It was excellent. But he cut a promo on the way to the ring, and Cena was there backstage because back then NXT needed some WWE guys to come to draw the house.
Yeah.
So Cena was there, and he said, well, who's that guy? Great promo. And then he started asking around, and then I remember it was Tyler Breeze was sitting there, and Tyler Breeze was like, oh, that's Enzo, him and Big Cash. You should see, like, this this shtick that they do. It's really funny. And Cena was like, okay, are you kidding? Are they actually really good? And Breeze said, yeah, I'll put my stamp on it. And he's like, which one's Cass? And he pointed to me. So Cena was going out there at the end of the night to do a dark segment with Sandow. And they had nothing, Damian Sandow, and they had nothing planned. So five minutes before he went out, Cena came up to me and Enzo in the viewing area, and he asked us, would you mind coming out and doing the dark segment with me and Sandow? And we were like, well, yeah, of course. He's like, can you get your gear on real quick? So me and Enzo, yeah. So we ran down the hallway of the locker room. We put our gear on. We ran through the auditorium, through the viewing area, all the way to Gorilla. And Cena was already out there with Sandow. We don't know what's going on. We have nothing planned. But me and Enzo just know we have so much material from promo class. We go out there. We had endless material. Because me and Enzo used to sit in my living room every Tuesday night down in Tampa. Pretty much how we're sitting right now. I'd be on the couch. He'd be in the chair. And we would just stay up until we had a promo for the next day. And we'd... You know, we had so much material from those Tuesday
nights.
Just
about anything or about somebody in particular?
About people in particular, about situations in particular, funny lines. Yeah. So we knew, okay, we have endless material from promo class and from Tuesday nights just sitting up just talking shop. So we went out, our music hit. Cena was like, here's my two friends. And we came out and fans at Full Sail. No idea who we were. I mean, they recognized Enzo as the guy that cut a promo and got his head smashed in, you know.
So they'd never seen you guys together.
Never.
Never seen you do anything.
Yeah, we walk out there, we just start pretty much cutting promos on Sandow, and Cena joins in. And then Enzo said, something about Sandow having a soft ass, like, yes. So, like, you have... There's more dimples in your ass than there is in a golf ball. Right. And he said that you're SAWFT soft. And then the fans kind of started saying soft. And then Cena was like, wait, what guys? What is what did you just say? And SAWFT soft. We kept repeating it. Finally, Cena was like, yeah, that's right. You're SAWFT soft. So well, the segment ended. Fan that went through a table. Everyone's home happy. But as we were leaving Full Sail, the fans that are there, they stay for autographs. So we're walking to our car, and me and Enzo were leaving together. Everybody was just saying soft and SAWFT as we're leaving the building.
Wow.
So we knew something had caught on there. And then from then on, we started getting booked on NXT. I mean, we were in handicap matches. We were losing the people in handicap matches. But we started getting booked on NXT as a unit from there on.
Just from that. And once again, that's because you were prepared because you had been hanging out with each other writing these promos.
Yeah, it was those Tuesday nights that really helped because even stuff we hadn't written down, we were like, oh, you remember that? You remember that one line you had that we forgot to write down? We didn't use it about whatever it was, the New York Yankees or the Boston Red Sox. Like, you remember that line? We could use that for Sand. Okay, we go out there. We'll say, you know, so we just had stuff that from just, or just like sitting in the car driving. You remember that one thing you said? We could use that here. So,
and why were the two of you guys together at this point? You just friends, or
yeah, we were friends. Enzo, anybody that knows Enzo knows, you know, sometimes he's could be a bit much at first, right?
Yeah.
So when he first got to FCW, really was at the time. Some people didn't like him, I'd say, but I, you know, knew he was a New Jersey guy. He was from my area. I really, you know, liked him and. I liked him when he came down for his tryout, and he cut a promo on his tryout. And I remember thinking to myself, man, if they signed this guy, me and him could do something together. Because he cut a promo, and I just dug it, and everybody, you know, dug it. And I was like, man, I really, really hope they sign this guy. And they ended up signing him. And the first day he was there, we went to the Yankees game because they were playing in Tampa by chance. And then we went out that night down in Soho and in Tampa, and the rest is history.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But is this true that you guys had actually known each other from when you were kids?
From a long time, from a way long time ago. It was just, 13, 14 years old, something like that. We had lost touch, you know, for a long, long time.
Were you in the same school, or how did you know each other?
Playing basketball on the cage. It's like a famous street ball venue.
And just show up from your house, and whoever's there to play.
Exactly.
Like street hockey, but for basketball.
Right, and there's leagues that play at night where the actual competition is, but like during the day, there's like the jobber, you know, five-on-fives. You just go there and just, I got next and stuff like that, and yeah, that's where we met.
Did you realize that instantly when you saw each other again, or had you been keeping in touch? Or
no, we hadn't kept in touch in, man, how long was that? 10, mm-hmm. 12 years? Yeah, we eventually realized that when he came out for his trial, I was like,
you recognize?
Yeah, yeah. And then he cut that promo, and I was like, man, I really, really hope they sign this guy.
Now, it's funny you're talking about playing basketball, and gosh, I don't know how tall you really are, 6'8", whatever it may be, 6'9".
6'9" and a half.
6'9" and a half, yeah. I mean, you're tailor-made for wrestling, pretty much. You got the hair, you got the look, you know what I mean? You can talk, you're just giant, pretty much a giant guy. And you were a big wrestling fan.
Yeah.
When you were a kid.
Yeah.
Is this something you've always wanted to do?
Oh, yeah. Ever since I was younger. I mean, I went to college for pre-med, but once I graduated college, I knew I had to pursue wrestling. But yeah, I've been a fan since I was, like, everybody says I'm a fan since I can remember. I mean, that's a cliche thing to say, but honestly, like, my earliest memories are of wrestling. My first show was at Madison Square Garden in February 92. There was an incident with Hogan and Sid going into WrestleMania 8. There was some controversy at the end of a battle royal and stuff, and I vividly remember, like, seeing Hogan, seeing Sid. That's like, if not my earliest memory, one of my earliest memories.
How old were you there?
Man. No, 92. February 92, I was four.
Five, four? Wow.
Yeah.
4 years old.
Yeah,
wow.
And I remember we were going to Madison Square Garden. My dad said, yeah, because it was an afternoon show on a Saturday. It was a Superstars taping, or it might have been live. But my dad was telling me, yeah, we're going to Madison Square Garden. I don't know what that means. So when we're walking towards the building, I'm expecting the show's going to be outdoors in a garden.
Like carrots, plants, and
yeah,
tomato plants.
So we got there. I was like, is this it? And yeah, I was like, oh, okay.
You know what's funny that you say that? Because my dad played for the Rangers.
Yeah.
And I was probably at the garden when I was 4 years old, 3 years old, 5 years old. And I don't think I've ever said that story before. But now that you say that, I can remember somehow that strikes a chord. Like
yeah.
The first time I was told Madison Square Garden, I was expecting, you know, like the Hanging Gardens of Babylon or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, what is this place with all these people in it? Where's the gardens?
Just a massive greenhouse with a hockey rink.
Yeah, like I'm expecting my grandma garden. So I'm expecting like my grandma's house or something.
Yeah, know? That's right. Exactly what was going through my head. I remember that distinctly. And that was my first experience.
Time.
Yeah.
But there was a bunch of times when you were in the crowd. Like there was I told you a story once where I hit Rock with a chair after I kind of hurt him and I swung. I was a little bit careless. And then you came back a couple of weeks later and said, I think I was there.
Yeah, when you told me the story, I said, yeah, I think I was there, man. And I said, I'm pretty sure it was Nassau Coliseum. We were debating whether it was Nassau or Meadowlands. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, that sounds too familiar. I'm pretty sure I was there. So I went back and I went through all of like October, November of 2001, because that's when you and The Rock were kind of feuding. And I went through all the Raws, and the one that this was the end of the one at the Nassau Coliseum, which I was at. And and I remember I sent you the picture of like a sign I had or something like that.
It didn't make sense.
I forget what it said, but
I'm going to rock with you or something.
Yeah, it was like a pro rock sign.
But it didn't really make sense. Like, you know, all the rock in the world.
It was horrible, but yeah. I made it just to get on TV, and guess what?
You're on TV.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, that's so funny. Yeah, yeah. It was like we were running out of time, and I was supposed to hit Rock with a chair, and it was like, you got 30 seconds to go off the air, and I just swung this chair and hit him in his arm, and he got hurt, but he didn't really get hurt. And then I got in trouble, and I was telling that story like, yeah, like I think I was there, dude. So you used to go to all those shows in that area.
Yeah, Nassau Coliseum, Meadowlands, Madison Square Garden, of course. Everything. Pay-per-views especially. Me and my dad, we would wait online when the tickets went on sale, like early in the morning, sometimes like 5 a.m. to like, because tickets went on sale at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
And Ticketmaster, and you know, back in those days, it was probably your best bet to get the tickets at the box office, at the arena. Pay-per-views were a must. After I didn't get to go to WrestleMania 10. After that, every pay-per-view in the area I went to, anything at Nassau, which was rare pay-per-view-wise.
Yeah.
The Garden, I went to every one, SummerSlam 98, Survivor Series 96, 2000 Rumble. Like, every pay-per-view there, every pay-per-view at the Meadowlands, after that I went to, after WrestleMania 10, I would go to. And then, of course, Raw and SmackDown and house shows here and there.
Why did you miss 10?
Money, timing. Oh, gotcha. Yeah, just
couldn't make it work. But just what you just said is so funny, waiting online. I used to do that. You'd get up at 4 in the morning, go down to the arena, and wait in line to buy a ticket.
Yeah.
There was no StubHub then, or even like online or whatever. It was just go.
Yeah.
If you got there first, you got one.
Exactly. And especially in that area, that the New York, New Jersey area, any show would sell out so quick. So I don't know why. I don't remember how it worked, but going to the box office was your best bet, because if you went to a Ticketmaster outlet at like the Wiz or something, 10 minutes after tickets went on sale, like, we're out. Mm-hmm. No tickets left in that area, especially for pay-per-views and stuff.
Yeah.
So the best bet was to go to the arena and get tickets.
And hang out at the box office. Yeah.
And the lines there would be long. But I remember there was one incident, actually, where SummerSlam 2002, we were waiting outside Nassau Coliseum the day tickets went on sale. We couldn't believe how long this line was. It was insane. And it wasn't moving after. It was like 10:20, 10:30 a.m. And I'm freaking out. I'm like, we're not going to get tickets. So we just keep calling Ticketmaster. Finally, we got through. And we got tickets through the phone service, Ticketmaster, which also sounds like ancient, calling Ticketmaster to get tickets. And I remember we got tickets. They were way up, but we got tickets, and all these other people online were still waiting. And I remember like knowing we had the tickets and walking by everybody that was still online. Like, yeah, that's right. We're going. You're not.
We're going to SummerSlam.
Yeah.
I was on that one. I think I remember that at Nassau Coliseum. I think I worked with Ric Flair.
Yeah.
I remember that.
That was a hot crowd, man.
Yeah.
It was wild.
Well, Nassau, you never knew what you're going to get. Sometimes it'd be quiet. Sometimes it'd be hot. Sometimes it'd be multiple fights in the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Which made the crowd hot, but no one's paying attention to what's going on in the ring.
Yeah. Coliseum is weird, and it's just that crowd. It's hard to predict what they're going to like and what they're not going to like. Sometimes they love their baby faces. Sometimes they love their heels.
What was the best show that you saw from that time frame? Is the one that stands out in your mind, or a match that stands out?
From that time frame.
Like when you were going to shows?
When I was going to shows. I'd have to say that SummerSlam 02 is one of the best shows I've ever been to. Also, Royal Rumble 2000 in the Garden. Triple H and Cactus Jack street fight.
Jericho versus China versus Bob Holly.
Yeah. Three-way.
Yeah.
The Elimination Chamber in the Garden, Survivor Series 02.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a good match too. Those, I'm trying to think, Survivor Series 02 and SummerSlam 02.
It's so funny because that's like, you know, I was there for all those shows.
That's
one of my eras, I guess you'd say, was right around that time frame. I can remember all of them.
Yeah.
Any point about. So are you going to these shows as a 6'8" guy, 6'9"? Are you that big?
Tiny. I was 5'8" till my junior year of high school.
Wow.
Yeah. I was a late bloomer, and then I hit a growth spurt, and I came back my junior year. People were like, what the hell happened to you? Over one summer, I grew like 8-9 inches.
How does that even happen?
I have no idea.
It's almost like unhealthy.
Yeah. People were stunned. It was a different human being, I guess.
Wow.
People were looking at me all weird, like the first day of junior year. It was like one summer.
What the hell were you eating?
Yeah, I just shot up.
Is that something that's in your family? Is your dad tall? Or
my dad's 6'1". My mom's tall. She's 5'11". So,
but not as tall as you.
Yeah. I don't know. I remember there was a time where I think I broke my hand in high school. And I had to get an x-ray. And the doctor told me, your growth plate in your wrist is huge. You're probably going to be 6'5", 6'6". Because I could tell by your growth plate, you have a lot of growing to do. So I said, oh, yeah. So the next day I went into class, and I told the kid in front of me, I remember his name is Jeremy Fardella, if he ever listens to this.
Shout out to Jeremy Fardella.
Yeah, I told him, hey man, I'm gonna be 6'5", 6'6". The doctor told me, and he said, you know, I'm 5 foot eight. He's looking at me, he's yeah, all right there, bro. Yeah, not happening. And then lo and behold, here we are.
So is that when you decided you wanted to start thinking about getting into wrestling, when you had this growth spurt?
Yeah, that's when I started realizing maybe I could be able to do it. Because you always think, man, I want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it realistic?
Mm-hmm. Can I actually make it happen?
Right. And once I got to that height, especially going after college, I was thinking, man, I feel like I have to pursue this because this is what I've always wanted to do. And I feel like I have a good chance of doing this because of just my size alone.
Right.
That based on that alone.
Because it's like people see, it's like, yeah, you should be a wrestler.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you should play basketball.
But back then I had, yeah, that's the one I always, do you play basketball? No, I don't play basketball.
Did you ever even try?
No, I played in high school and in college, yeah. But that's the question I get asked, like, on the street.
Even now?
Yeah, football player, basketball, how tall are you? You know,
yeah.
Random people, how tall are you? It's just...
You get that all the time. I know Big Show gets that. How tall are you?
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, man, come on. Just let me relax.
You got something else?
Yeah.
Is it the same thing, really?
Yeah.
Exactly. So when did you start training then? Like, how did you – I know you didn't start at NXT. You actually trained before that, right?
Yeah, I trained with Johnny Rods in Brooklyn.
The famous Johnny Rods.
Yeah.
Tommy Dreamer and Devon Dudley, I know for sure.
Yeah, Taz.
Taz, right.
Yeah, he's a 1996 WWE Hall of Famer.
Really?
Yeah. He was
wow.
In, yeah. In 96.
Cool.
Yeah.
There's a famous school in the area.
Yeah, and Dumbo is actually the name of the area in Brooklyn. It's by the Manhattan.
Dumbo?
Down under the Manhattan Bridge overpass. It's just like, yeah.
It's right. That's the real New York over there.
Yeah, it's you know, Dumbo. It's right there in Brooklyn. It's right by the Manhattan Bridge. It's actually really close to the Brooklyn Bridge, too, on Front Street at Gleason's Gym. I think they actually just moved around the block. But, yeah, I started training with Johnny Rods because he was in the area. He was reputable. And I could take the train there because I didn't have a car.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to, like, you know, get on one train to another train to another train.
Right, right.
And then, so I started with Johnny Rods in Brooklyn. And I was there for about a year and a few months.
Now, you're a very charismatic guy. You know, obviously we talked about that. Had you done any type of performing before that at all? The plays or anything like that? Or
man, no. I don't think I did any sort of, like, real reputable performing or anything like that. I was always performing, like, even with my basketball team and stuff, I would give pregame speeches and stuff, and I would, like, cut promos like The Rock, and I would cut wrestling promos in the locker room, like, at halftime and stuff. I was always doing stuff like that, but I was never, like, acting or on stage or anything like that, no.
Because you're a good singer, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't want to toot my own
horn. But I'm saying it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. You've heard me in the locker room sometimes. Yeah. Yeah, I was always singing too, like stuff like that, singing on trains and stuff like that. I remember in college singing on train platforms and just, you
on
know.
The platform.
Yeah. In college. Like
the hat in front of you making some cash.
Yeah, like a little, little coffee cup, shaking it up, asking.
I'll never go from rags to riches, thank you.
But, yeah, I mean, always, you know, I was always singing, always performing in a way, just like goofing off with your boys, but never anything official.
This is Talk is Jericho.
Look, being a wrestling fan in the early 2000s, you mentioned The Rock. Was The Rock your favorite guy? Or
no, The Rock wasn't. I kind of, my guys, so Bret Hart originally, and then into Austin, into Triple H. And then I was a huge Brock Lesnar fan when he debuted.
Mm.
Yeah, because I remember just the night after WrestleMania 18, he debuted, and his debut, he just came in and just destroyed three guys, like absolutely annihilated.
Kind of what he does now still.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember just thinking, who the F is this guy?
Right.
And I was on that bandwagon right there in 02. But before that, it was Triple H and Stone Cold and Bret Hart. Yeah.
So when you started training with Johnny, was it fairly easy for you? Was he in the ring hands-on?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't get in the ring that much. If he needed to, he would. And even at his age, he could get in there and stretch some people pretty badly. Yeah, I felt like I was athletic, and I felt like I had good footwork and running ropes and stuff like that. I felt yeah, that I was above average for where I should be. Like, just seeing everybody else that was training, mm-hmm. and especially for my size, because, you know, here comes the big clumsy idiot, you know. He no footwork. He's not going to be able to do anything. I felt like I was almost born. I don't know, born for it, or mm-hmm. and I don't know. I feel like people that watch wrestling their whole life are better when they step in a ring for the first time, because it's just natural to them from watching it for so long. They just know, and they're kind of imitating what they've seen.
That's true.
Yeah, so I feel like getting in the ring for the first time, if you're a lifelong fan and a real lifelong fan and you've always been watching it, I feel like you have a better chance for success, because you've just, I don't know, you've been, I guess, watching footage mm-hmm. your whole life. You've been practicing your whole life for that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's you have the foundation. I know for like my friend and I used to wrestle each other in my basement, in my parents' basement. We put, you know, pillows down from the couch, and we reenacted Steamboat and Savage WrestleMania 3. We knew the whole match off by heart, and we'd do it. And you know, you would. I remember we also used to. I saw Owen Hart take a backdrop and land on his feet once, the Blue Blazer. So we used to do that off the chair, off the back of a chair, run over to like the big futon chair that you know, you lean back and the thing comes up where you put your legs on it. I remember I'd run towards the chair, flip off the back of it, and stand up. So the first time that I was ever in a ring with the Hart brothers, Keith Hart threw me off the ropes. You know, keeping in mind, I didn't know even know how to hit the ropes. I knew nothing. It was the first time I'd ever been in the ring. He threw me off the ropes and said, take a backdrop. Didn't know how to bump. Didn't know how to do anything. How crazy is that? Like, throw off the ropes, take a backdrop to a guy who's never been in the ring before.
Yeah.
So when he threw me off, all I knew how to do was flip over and stand on my feet. And that's what I did. And I thought, I'm going to be the star pupil in the class. And then he beat the shit out of me. But he thought I was being a smartass. But I knew a little bit because I had been practicing and knew the concept of what wrestling was.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of guys did not know that.
Right.
I think it does help when you start out as a big fan.
Definitely translates, for sure.
You know, absolutely.
Yeah.
So how long were you wrestling, having real matches out of Johnny's camp?
Took me a while to have a real match, a few months.
What was your first? Who was your first match against?
My first match was it a tag match, I think, against, was it me and Bad Billy Walker versus Reggae Dones? Reggae Dones and maybe Astro Morales.
I think that's what I
was. Cowboy Big Bill Young. I was a cowboy from Lubbock, Texas, man.
Hey, dude, let me tell you something. My first match, I was a cowboy from Casper, Wyoming.
Yeah.
Cowboy Chris Jericho.
There you go.
The Cowboys
just
unite.
A couple of cowboys sitting in a room talking, drinking coffee. A
couple jet lagged cowboys drinking coffee. Now, let me ask you this. So I grew up in Calgary, or, you know, I started in Calgary, which has a rodeo scene and is a big, you know, cowboy area.
Yeah.
You know, Dumbo, Queens, Bronx, not a lot of cowboys down there. How did you end up with the cowboy gimmick?
So there was this. One of the elder statesmen at Johnny Rod's school, his name was Cowboy Bad Billy Walker. He was their top heel, I guess. And when I came in, Johnny saw a tall guy. He's like, oh, he has potential. He might become something one day. So he put me with their top heel to be, you know, under his tutelage. Maybe, you know, he'll gain experience. Gotcha. So I also had to be a cowboy, of course, because I was his nephew, Bad Billy Walker's nephew from Lubbock, Texas. So that's where they came up with.
Brought down my nephew from Lubbock, Texas. He's going to teach you a lesson.
Exactly.
And, of course, they got to call you Big.
Of course.
Because that's the way it is.
Yeah, like six nicknames. Cowboy, Big, Bill, Young.
Young.
Yeah.
So what was your cowboy outfit? What did that entail?
Oh, my Lord. I had like these. Like the first time when I debuted officially without no match, I just did a run in, of course, and gave someone a boot.
Yeah.
You know, nothing's changed. I wore like this horrible denim jacket and jeans and sneakers. I didn't look like a cowboy at all, except for the freaking hat that I was wearing. And then I started wearing these black overalls with a black hat and like cowboy-ish type boots. So I was really evolving, and eventually I just started wearing black jeans and a black wife beater, and that's the nickname for like the under.
Yeah, yeah, the white.
The yeah, those
tank top.
Yeah,
sort of
yeah.
Thing, yeah. The Al Bundy shirt. Yeah.
Exactly, and a black cowboy hat. Mm-hmm. So I was definitely not the most well-dressed cowboy.
Yeah, you transformed into a gangster cowboy.
Yeah, exactly. A cowboy from Queens.
Well, that's it worked though, you know, absolutely. Like you have no, and you have no choice.
Yeah.
When you first start, I remember, like, you know, you want me to be a cowboy? Like, I don't know anything about cowboys. I'm a rock and roll guy. It's like, you're a cowboy.
Yeah.
All right. I'm a cowboy. There you go. And I still have the program, Cowboy Chris Jericho from Casper, Wyoming.
Did you have to do any? Did you like have to do anything cowboyish? Did you have
to
wear
like that? It's funny because I hated the idea, and I called one of the guys who had been training us, who probably had a year of experience, who said, well, if you don't want to do it, don't do it. And so I remember going back to the promoter saying, I don't want to be a cowboy. Now, can you imagine some 19-year-old idiot saying, I don't want to do something? I would have made the guy wear a Dumb and Dumber giant cowboy hat, you know? But he didn't. He just said, well, then don't be a cowboy. But I was still listed as Cowboy Chris Jericho in the program.
Yeah.
So I never had to be overly cowboy.
Oh, good for you.
So, yeah, I got out of it. I squeaked out of it. Typical Jericho right off the start. I didn't like it, so I weaseled my way out of it. So, yeah, I didn't have a big cowboy regalia. You know, I would have been a great cowboy, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think you would have.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
I think we should try it out.
We could. Yeah. Just a couple cowboys hanging out.
Here in Germany.
And just not say anything about it. Yeah, tonight, as a tag team, we just come out with cowboy hats on and don't. It's just big Cass and Jericho.
Yeah, yeah.
And like ride horses.
Vests.
Yeah, lasso.
Cowboy hats.
Do lasso tricks.
How confused would the fans be tonight?
Said, who's these cowboys here? I don't understand. The horses and the lassos. Where's the giant? Where's the little guy? So how did you finally get signed by WWE?
I was going down to WrestleMania 26 as a fan.
Which was in?
Phoenix. And I saw Matt Stryker used to be with WWE at the time, and he was at a bar down there. And I met him just by chance. I walked past him, and I said, hey, I'm training with Johnny Rods. And he said, oh, really? Okay.
Because he was a Rods guy too, right?
Stryker yes.
was? Yeah.
Yeah. So the next show we had, after that, he actually came to watch me, and I guess he really was impressed, or at least he thought potential. You know, we could send him to developmental, and he could maybe become something. So he put a good word in with John Laurinaitis, the head of talent relations at the time, and when they came to Nassau Coliseum, the next year, it was almost the next year. It was 2 days after the Royal Rumble in 2011. I remember I was sitting up like in front of my computer at home, and I get a call from a 203 number. Never knew. Now you get a call from a 203 number, you're like, run for the hills.
Yeah, you don't answer.
Yeah, but I never got a call from a 203, and I didn't even know what that was. So I picked up, and it was John Laurinaitis, and he said, we have SmackDown tonight at Nassau Coliseum. Can you make it out here? I said, yeah, for sure. So I just went out. Drove out there as fast as I could. It was snowing too.
Right.
And just met with Johnny Ace and sat down and chatted. And then he sent me to Florida for a tryout. And that's how I ended up getting signed.
So it was very quickly you got signed.
Yeah. After meeting with John Laurinaitis, it was very quickly.
See, once again, you look at a guy like you, it's like, I think it was maybe somebody was talking about it in boxing, but it's true in wrestling. Like a little guy has to prove himself to make it. A big guy keeps getting chance after chance after chance. And that's not good or bad. That's just the nature of the business.
That's true, yeah.
So a guy like you walks in, and they're probably like, holy shit, there's not a lot of 6'9" guys that have been training, and good-looking guy wants to get in the business. So
yeah.
It wasn't too much of a hard decision, I imagine.
Yeah, well, I didn't look like this when I got signed. If you see pictures of me when I first got the FCW, short hair, no facial hair, way skinnier than I am now. But yeah, I guess they just saw my height and they said, well, you know, we'll give him a shot, you know, because you never know.
How'd you get the name of was Colin Cassidy, right?
I pitched so many names because when you get there, you just have to be pitching names.
I always love these stories.
Yeah, and I'm just pitching, like, they asked for like a list of 25 first names and a list of 25 last names. So I pitched all these different name combinations. And I really like the last name Costigan because my favorite movie is The Departed, and Billy Costigan is the character in the movie.
Is that the one that Wahlberg plays, or is that DiCaprio?
That's DiCaprio, DiCaprio. Billy Costigan.
Yeah, yeah.
Costigan. I really like that last name, and I really was pushing for that one. But lo and behold, here we go, Colin Cassidy. So that was the name I was given. Of course, you roll with it. You know, I'm not gonna.
Where did Colin come from?
It was one of my first names. I don't know, because they... So I gave them a bunch of names that I would have liked, and they just chose one random first name from a name that I gave them with a different last name, a random last name from another name I gave them. So yeah, here's your name.
What was the Colin name?
What do you mean?
Where was the last name for Colin?
I think that might have been...
Colin Castigan?
No, no. Costigan was, what the hell was the first name for? I forget the first name for Costigan. I pitched like five different names with the last name Costigan. Yeah. My first five were all Costigan. I forget.
Right.
It definitely wasn't a C though, because I didn't want to, I didn't
they
want
like
to double. Yeah.
Double letter yeah. names. Don't
Love
they?
It. Yeah. And then I remember I went into Dusty and I was like, I don't know if I like the, I don't know if I like the name. And he you know, he sits there and he looks just into midair and he's, you know, as if he's looking at a billboard, he goes, Colin Cathedon. I could see it. Yes, that's what we're doing. Colin Cathedon. So once Dusty put the stamp on it, I was like, all right, let's do it.
No, it's, you know, talking with all you guys that came from NXT, and there's so many of you now in this day and age, probably 75% of the roster. How influential and important was Dusty Rhodes to you and all the guys you worked with?
Oh, words can't, you can't put it into words, man. Mm-hmm. Just how influential he was to every, all, I'd say anybody that went through FCW that's on the main roster right now, and everybody in NXT that got to sit down with Dusty, tremendously influenced by him. Mm-hmm. Just character wise, promo wise, he was always hands on. He always had time for everybody. He would sit, if you knocked on his door and just sat down. Sometimes I would just like to knock on his door and just kind of shoot the shit with him, you know, just mm-hmm. not even talk wrestling or talk, just go in there and just chat and talk movies and stuff. He was a big, big, loved movies.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we always used to talk about movies after promo class.
Like, what kind of movies did he dig?
Anyway, did he like?
Did he like, yeah.
Man, he likes so many. He It's just, I can't think of one in particular that was his favorite. It's slipping my mind right now. There was one he always talked about. I forget what it was, but after class, he would just, anybody seen any movies this week? And when one person would bring it up, then we'd start a conversation. Then another movie got mentioned. We'd be talking about movies for like a half an hour after mm-hmm. promo class.
That's pretty cool. Like the human side of Dusty Rhodes. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, anybody that went through NXT or FCW, just tremendously influenced by
And we've
him.
Talked about this before. It's like, you know, you talk about with other people, like, you know, after he passed away, you haven't been able to, you know, replace him, but you don't replace a guy like that.
Can't be done.
You can't bring in like guy A or guy B. Yeah. To do what Dusty did.
Can't be done. And just some of the stories he would tell, and he's going to be missed, you know, for forever, man. You can't replace that guy.
Talk is Jericho.
So when you got called up, what were some of the big differences between WWE and NXT?
Travel was number one. Mm-hmm. Travel is way more hectic and way more intense on WWE. Man, just larger audience, of course, like going from Full Sail TV tapings, which is, I don't know, 600-700 people, mm-hmm. maybe 1,000, I don't know, but into buildings of 15,000 and stuff
right.
like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's just everything's of a larger magnitude. Getting recognized places. Like in Orlando, I'd get recognized just because of NXT. Now I get recognized everywhere, just anywhere I am, just someone will, because, you know, more eyes are on the product, more people are familiar with who you are. Yeah, just getting recognized more. The travel was way more intense. Bigger audience. Just everything on a grander scale was probably the biggest difference.
Was it hard for you, a big change? Because you guys, as an act in NXT, was Enzo, Cass, and Carmella.
Yeah.
And then when you guys got brought up to WWE, it was just you and Enzo with no Carmella.
Right.
How was that, and how did you know that, like, when you got called up? Was it a last-minute decision?
Yeah, when Triple H told me and Enzo, what you don't see on that documentary is, like, 5 minutes after that, he talked to Carmella and told her she wasn't coming with us, which obviously was, you know, upsetting. Mm-hmm. But he told her it's what's best for her. And I got to be honest, I believe it, because if she would have came up with us, she would have just been playing second fiddle to me and Enzo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she wouldn't have really been able to make as much of a name for herself. Her being on her own a few more months in NXT and then coming up to
SmackDown
on her own, I think it really, really helped her because she's her own established character. Besides, like, some fans that'll chant, "How you doing?" Like, there's no real link between me and Enzo and her in terms of television product or to the audience doesn't really know that except for the the few that small percentage. It's NXT fans, but
I think it probably helped you guys out a bit too. Coming in as babyfaces, it's hard.
Yeah.
As babyfaces to have a hot chick with you.
Oh,
as heels.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Babyface is different, right?
Having the hot chick with you is definitely a heel move.
Yeah.
Yeah, because everyone jealous and or whatever it is.
Who are these guys?
Yeah.
What do they do to deserve that?
Exactly.
You know? Right.
Yeah. So that it did help us also because, like you said. Having the hot chick always is just, it's just always the heel guy. How do we want to make this guy a bigger heel? You put a hot valet, a hot valet with him. That's, it's been forever,
Totally. But another thing you just mentioned when you said the how you do, I mean, you guys are basically, that's just street talk, dudes talking to each other in the area of the country that you come from. You're talking about Jersey or Queens or that area.
Yeah.
Is a lot of the stuff you do just stuff that you, is New York style talk?
Yeah. How you doing is just a...
Yeah,
classic common saying.
Like, right,
it's just everybody says that in New York or New Jersey. How you doing? That one's like that one's easy. The soft, no, that's obviously not really New York talk. But a lot of the stuff we say is just New York slang and Jersey slang and stuff like that. We just take from our past experiences and people from home. Even if I'm talking to a friend on the phone and he says something that I find is funny, and I know Enzo does the same thing. We'll just steal it. If he says something and it pops us and we start laughing when we get off the phone, go to your little notebook on the iPhone, type in what he said. Okay, I could use that in a promo.
Save it for later, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's it's funny because you do the how you doing riff almost like Austin used to do the what. Right?
Yeah.
I think we did that one time or I gave you an idea to do that or something.
Yeah, we did. Oh, man, you gave it us the idea and – I forget what town it was.
Whatever it was.
The one I remember where it was ridiculous was Green Bay, Wisconsin. We started naming cheeses. and like you said, instead of the what, it was just the how you doing.
Right.
It was like cheddar, how you doing?
Right.
Sharp cheddar, how you doing? Colby Jack, how you doing? Pepper Jack, how you doing? The one last time, we'll be in Green Bay next Monday.
Yeah.
The last time we were there was that Raw. See,
that's right. And people love that. And that's why I had the idea because Steve and I used to do that with anything.
Yeah.
Come over to England and talk about bands. Or go. The one I used to love is like, here we are in Los Angeles. What? The city that never sleeps. What? The River City. What? Cowtown. What? The Big Apple. What? Like just any city nickname you could think
wasn't
of.
Wasn't even the right name.
Right. That might be Steve right now talking about it to see. That might be our wake-up call. We always get wake-up calls.
Oh, yeah. That probably is our wake-up call.
Let me see where the phone is. Hello? Wake-up call. Thank you.
That's 12 minutes early. What the hell are they doing? That could have been 12 minutes of valuable sleep.
By the way, in case you guys think it's 6 in the morning or something like that, it's 4:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
We get our wake-up calls.
Because we got
we
got to be on the bus at what, 5:15?
5:15, yeah. Right. But so the bottom line is that people love the riff. Like I said, we used to do the cities with the nicknames or the cheese. I think Steve and I did cheeses before, which is probably where the idea came from. But people like, I mentioned before, the sing-along. They like being a part of the show.
Of course.
And you guys do that, which was a huge part of the Attitude Era. And it comes and goes. But now Enzo and Cass, you have that. And people love it.
Yeah. We want to go out there and have fun with the fans, is to have them play along. And when you go to a show, you want to be a big part of it. And We try to incorporate them just like that because they love doing stuff like that, the fans. So
what's your most popular catchphrase? Because there's so many of them. Think of even the T-shirts that you have made and stuff.
How you doing? Soft and cup of haters, probably.
Cup of haters. That's fairly new, yeah.
Yeah. Trying to think of anything else that's not. Those
and
three.
7 feet tall and you can't teach that.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Certified G, bona fide stud, can't teach that. Yeah.
They can't teach that. I think Enzo explained that to us on the show before. But, 7 feet tall, can't teach that. Great, great line.
Yeah.
And speaking of being 7 feet tall, 6'9½", whatever it may be, a few times over the past year, I mean, most of the time it's been tag team stuff, but there's been a few moments where you've had single matches.
Yeah.
The one that pops into mind is the Fatal 4-Way for the number one contender.
The Universal title match.
Universal title match,
yeah. That was in Houston, yeah.
So how was that for you to kind of get those moments on your own?
It's good, man. Like, Enzo went down with an injury, which is always unfortunate and sucks, but it gave me a chance to kind of shine a little bit on my own. And, after the night after he went down, I was in a, I believe it was a 6-man tag or an 8-man tag on Raw. And I guess I did pretty well because the next week they had me in the opening seg and the final seg with you. And
you remember
putting the seg together. I was really nervous about doing it. And then you were so generous. You're like, dude, you know, you're like,
this so where, I had you come sit right.
Yeah, you're like, this is what we're gonna do with you. You know, we were putting it together, and you're all like hands on, like wanting to make me like look.
You gotta look like a giant,
exactly. Yeah. And you were just like, yeah. And then you just stepped to me and you boomed me. You know, it was, you know, that was to me was awesome because you know I'd just been put on the main roster, quote unquote, and now I'm in the opening segment, the final segment with Chris Jericho. Awesome, dude, you know, and you were like extremely helpful. You know, like when you come up to the main roster, you don't know people's personalities that well because we were only been up 3 weeks, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like nervous, I was like, oh man, but you were like so putting it together, so hands on, and just so, yeah, we got to make you look great here, and then you got to look great here. Like it was just like, man, you know, it was good.
The idea. Were we supposed to have a match? Is that the night that Ambrose destroyed
we were supposed to have the main event match, and then Ambrose jumps you from behind.
Right. And then you beat me up, too.
Yeah, the funniest...
Lost my jacket.
The funniest part about it was because of cameras and angles, I had to hide like behind the stairs almost under the ring while you and Ambrose did what you were doing. And then I had to watch the Tron to see where once you got to the almost to the bell ringer's corner... When you were leaving, I had to then get up and walk around and meet you front side. But like that whole time, I'm sitting there, and people in the front row are right there looking at me. They're like, what are you doing?
I see you there.
What? Aren't you supposed to have a match? And then they're fighting on the stage. You're just lying on the floor.
And that's the worst because there's only two or three people that can see it, but those are the ones that get in your head.
Like, yeah.
Whenever you're selling, they're like, get up. You're not hurt. And you're supposed to say, like, fuck off.
And they're taking pictures and stuff,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. I remember that, though. Yeah, I got jumped from behind. I got my $15,000 jacket destroyed, and I got beat up by you.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to be the heel.
Yeah.
Boy, what a heel I am. Jeez, you feel bad for me, right?
Yeah.
But then there was that four-way you talked about. That was a great match there.
Yeah, that was a good opportunity for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the night after SummerSlam, I guess Finn going down. Again, injury, man. Injury, yeah. Unfortunate, but it leads to opportunity. And I had the number one contenders match for the Fatal 4-Way against Rusev. I won that. And then, yeah, that match in Houston, that's probably my favorite match I've had since.
Which one is it?
The Fatal 4-Way,
right.
The Universal title.
Yeah.
I remember I came back from that match after I'd been eliminated, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I came back and who was it? I remember talking to Vince real quickly, but it might have been Hunter. And I told, yeah, it was definitely Hunter. I said, that's the most fun I've had in my entire life. And I was like, not just wrestling. That was the most fun I've ever had in my life, anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like a good crowd. Like, when you're in there with so many guys that are established and there's a different feel to, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. When there's like even our match at SummerSlam with you and Kevin, like when you have guys that are so established and over, like it just makes the match so much better because the fans just react so much mm-hmm. differently, you know, because they know.
So much easier.
Yeah. Exactly. It's so much easier when you're, mm-hmm. so yeah, that was the most fun I've ever had. And yeah, I felt like I was given an opportunity that night. I felt like I did pretty well.
Did you get any feedback from Hunter or Vince?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were, you know, really, 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 really good.
Because I would think that's the, you know, the end game here. I mean, Enzo and Cass, great tag team, and you guys can be a tag team for the rest of the time, but there's going to be times when you split apart and come back together and split apart.
Of course, all great tag teams do, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, go that route. So, yeah, I'm sure that he'll be a singles guy and I'll be a singles guy. Mm-hmm. And I think that was kind of a litmus test for me.
Right.
I think that's why, you know, it was done. It was a litmus test for me, and I think it passed.
Well, yeah. I mean, like you said, it's your first chance to really be in the, like you said, in a big spotlight, in a big position by yourself.
Right.
You know, in either sink or swim. Because I always think, too, like I think you working for the world title or U.S. title, I think Enzo would be great for the cruiserweight title.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, if they put him in that division – it's personality up the ass. Whole different element. It's a legit top star in this world. I think it would put a whole new focus on that title.
Yeah.
And he's the right size for it, you know? I think it would be a great way to do it, kind of. You guys do both of those things.
Yeah. He's under 205.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, he's got to be close to it, you know? Just as we wind down here, one thing I was going to talk about, I know that you're a huge Springsteen fan.
Yeah.
How many times have you seen Bruce Springsteen live?
25, 26.
Yeah. Now, where does that come from?
Fanaticism.
Love of Springsteen.
Just, you know, going to concerts with my dad when I was younger.
Okay, so your dad's
a big fan. yeah, always taking me to concerts and shows. And yeah, that's kind of like a bonding thing that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So whenever he's in the area, we always go. I remember there was one tour, it was the Rising Tour. We must have seen him 6 times on that one tour. We saw him like 4 times at Giant Stadium and twice at Shea. Like, yeah, just, and then, you know, the Magic Tour, we saw him at the Garden and the Coliseum a few times. Like, yeah, it's just like some, if he's in the area and me and my dad are both there, we go no matter what.
Is your dad proud of you for being in the WWE?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Does he come to your shows?
Yeah, yeah. He comes all the time. Well, when we're in the area, the New York, New Jersey area. Yeah. And he'll be at WrestleMania.
That's great.
Yeah.
The thing I love about Springsteen just going back is I only saw him once, but I love the calling it on the fly element.
Yeah.
You know, I'd never seen that before. And I think after when I read the set list back, there's maybe 3 or 4 songs that I knew and, you know, 20 that I'd never heard. But the whole show was so much fun because, as you know, people just hold up signs.
Yeah.
And he goes to the crowd, just picks the signs of the song. A song title will be on the sign.
Yes.
Right? And then he
puts them all in a pile on the stage. He'll just, as he's doing a song, say he's doing like, I don't know, Born to Run. As he's slapping hands in front of the stage, he's also grabbing signs and he throws them in a pile on the stage. And then eventually they'll finish a song. He'll look at the pile. He'll put his hand in and he'll pull out a random sign. Just one that he had picked as he was just doing another song. And he'll just pull out a random sign and they'll play that song right there. And I've been at a concert before where he pulled the sign out. They started playing, okay? And then it like messed up, and Stevie Van Zandt had to come over to him. That's the wrong. He's like, "What key is this song?" And then they had to like, okay, he had like a side conversation with Stevie because he had to explain to him how to start the song. And then 1, 2, 3, bang! Then they went back into it. Yeah, because he totally forgot.
Is he showed the sign to the drummer, to Max Weinberg?
Yep.
And then it seemed to me that as long as Max saw it, everyone else would just have to kind of follow through. Because there's 15. People on stage. There's a big horn section now. Yeah. There's 3 guitar players. Tom Morello was playing with them that night.
Oh, wow.
I mean, there's a real sort of like, you're holding on by the skin of your teeth, but you better freaking do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember I read something in Rolling Stone when Clarence Clemens passed away that he had, and it was a genius move. Instead of replacing just Clarence, because you couldn't do that, he brought in 3 guys. One is his nephew and a couple of the cats. And I guess he went over there and told his nephew Jake during one of the earlier shows to play a solo, and Jake didn't really know what to do and kind of miffed it and didn't really do much. And I think maybe it's Van Zandt or someone came over and said to him, "Listen, dude, come here. When the boss tells you to play a solo, you play a solo, and if you don't, you ain't getting any more solos." He said, "Next time I got told to do a solo, I ripped that money. I was into it."
But yeah, of course.
I found a lot of similarities between calling a match in the ring, which is a lost art. I can still do it, but you don't do it much.
Yeah.
And what Springsteen was doing with that set, I just really enjoyed watching it from that aspect of it, where every night is a different show.
Always. And if you're going to a Springsteen show and you want to sing along to every song, then you better know his entire catalog.
Right.
Because he will pull songs out that you've never heard before. So, yeah, if you want to know every song that he's playing that night, you better know every song he's ever done, because he pulls anything out. You know?
That's what makes it fun for him.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that like we used to do a lot more in wrestling, where every match was different from the night before.
Yeah.
You know, now you do get into a little bit of a zone, and when something's working, why change it? But I always love that aspect of, let's play song B or do move B. Well, that sucked. Yeah, I know, but it was fun.
Yeah, exactly.
We won't do it again.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It was fun, right?
Exactly.
Is that something you guys ever learned at all, about the art of calling it in the ring, or was that?
Yeah, when I started with Johnny Rods, yeah, we used to just take corners. That was that was like my favorite thing we ever did, and it's like a training exercise too. That you know, I feel like maybe we should bring it back, or you know, everyone just takes corners, and you're just working a match, but you're tagging in and out, and there's like 2 people in each corner, so there's 8 guys. So there's 10 guys to a ring, 2 guys in each corner. You just get in there, call some spots, work a little bit, tag out. That guy comes in. You know what I mean? And just everyone's tagging in and out. By the end of the drill, it's 2 hours later. The ring is drenched in sweat. You know what I mean? And I remember that was one of my favorite things to do, where we just take corners.
I've never been a producer, nor will I ever be one, but I thought if I ever was, every night I'd put up the card, you know, and we'd see who the card is. And right every night before the show, I'd switch two matches around. So, like, just before you're about to go out, if it's like, you know, Cass and versus Enzo and Jericho versus, you know, Sami Zayn, 5 minutes before change, Jericho and Cass go out there. What are we supposed to do? Like, I don't know. Figure it out. You got 10 minutes. Like, how bad could it be? And you would learn a lot, which really helps your skills in sharpening that improv, following what's, you know, what's following, what you want to do according to the reactions that you're getting.
Yeah, they do that sometimes in NXT. That happened to me, man, 2 years ago. I went out for a match. I don't even remember who. It was the opening match. I don't even remember who I was supposed to be working with. But it wasn't Elias Sampson, I'll tell you that. And then all of a sudden, Elias Sampson's music hits, and out comes the Drifter with his guitar and his. And we had to call the match on the fly in the ring. We actually did, at least we thought we did really, really well, because we had this whole spot with the guitar pick, and finally he freaks out and flicks it in my face, and the crowd went, "Oh no, you didn't, bro." And then we, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we had to call the whole match out there. They do that sometimes there, and in FCW used to have kayfabe cards, which was. There'd be no card.
Nice.
And they would just tell people to get dressed. And they would just have you go out. Like, they'd have the card, but they wouldn't tell anybody. Mm-hmm. And be like, all right, you're up now. And, yeah. But that's back when FCW was doing, you know, buildings of 10 people.
Yeah.
Now people come to see the NXT product. They can't be doing that.
That's what ECW was like. The Paulie would be making the card up along the, as the show went on.
Yeah.
So match two would be on the ring. It'd be like, okay, three, Scorpio and Jericho, you guys are on next. And I'm like, all right. Okay, Taz and Tommy, you guys are on fourth when we were out there. He would just put it together on how the crowd was reacting.
Oh,
he'd have
really?
A couple matches, maybe the main event would be set in stone.
Yeah.
But the rest he would put together kind of on the fly.
Based on how the crowd was reacting.
He would say that, but I think also he was just really super unorganized. Maybe a combination of the two.
Okay.
Yeah, but he would do that, to, you know, and that was, like you said, the sign of really watching the crowd and trying to give them what they were expecting in accordance to how they were reacting.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
So, last couple questions. What's your favorite Springsteen song? Or favorite couple of Springsteen songs?
Man, that's tough. I'm going to Backstreets. I like Backstreets.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right on. Have you ever seen him play it live?
Yeah, one time.
It's kind of an obscure tune.
I don't think he ever. I think he rarely plays it live. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of. Yeah, it's one of his. It was a hit, but like he never plays it.
Mm.
Yeah.
You ever met him?
Nope. Would love to, man.
One of these days.
It's gonna. Yeah,
he's not a wrestling fan.
I could imagine that. Yeah,
it's not his shtick.
Yeah, I tried to meet him. I went to see him two nights after SummerSlam this year, and I had the PR guy Adam. From WWE,
yeah,
try to contact his team to try and meet him. You got big cast wants to meet you, Springsteen. Maybe we could do this. Springsteen was flying. Get the hell out of here.
The pile of requests is bigger than the pile of songs that he's picking out of the crowd to meet him, right?
And he doesn't meet with anybody.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah,
and that's what I love about those guys. Like McCartney's the same. Where it's like the head of the guy who owns the arena wants to meet. He's like, yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'll say this, though. I showed Adam this picture. I'll show it to you after the show. We went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. It's become a yearly tradition, but it was the year Kiss got in. And long story short, we ended up at the backstage party after. We knew somebody that was a wrestling fan, got us into the after show. Springsteen is there. I'm talking to him, and I'm asking the dumbest questions because, like, you know, I think it was pretty loaded. And I remember I went to the bar, and Jackson Brown was there, so I got a drink. I turned on the Springsteen standard. He's got, like, a down-filled jacket.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, oh, you got your down-filled jacket on. And he's cold out there, and he's like, yeah, you know, it's my jacket. And I'm like, oh, I should have asked him for a picture. So I turn around, and the bouncer's there now. And he's like, there's no pictures. And I said, I just want to take a picture. He said, no, you can't take a picture. And I said, well, I was just talking to the boss. And he's like, no, you got to go. So I'm like, boss. Okay. So my cousin and I are like a finely oiled machine. We've been doing this for years.
Yeah.
Springsteen's walking down the corridor. I run around. So I'm approaching him, and I give my phone to my cousin Chad. And I'm like, when the time comes, you know what to do. We walk around. I go, I see Springsteen. I just turn around and face the same direction Springsteen's looking. Like I walk past him and turn around. My cousin Chad goes, Bruce, he looks. Quick 1 second picture. We leave. I get the picture of me and Springsteen.
Does it look like you guys are...
Oh, yeah. It looks like we're best buddies. We used to do it with wrestlers all the time.
Oh, that's great.
So there you go. I'll show it to you. Last question. I know you mentioned your favorite match was the four-way. Is there another match that stands out that you've had that you really enjoy? Either one of your tag team matches or NXT matches or...
Yeah, probably us and the Revival from Roadblock.
The Toronto one.
Yeah. Yeah, the Rico Coliseum.
I hear about the Revival quite often. It seems like they should be coming up pretty soon, too.
They should be. Hopefully within the next, I don't know. But should be happening soon. We shall see, yeah.
Right on, man. Yeah. Well, it's great talking to you, dude. We got to get ready for the big show today.
Yeah, Dusseldorf.
Dusseldorf, how you doing? Is it Stuttgart? How you doing? Berlin, how you doing?
And then get ready for a six-hour drive tonight, man.
Yeah, I know, right?
6 hours.
Here we go. Bring out the booze.
Hello, everybody. Clint here from Team Tiger Awesome, reminding you that the Jericho Network is brought to you in part this week by ManAlone.com. Guys, what happens to you when your wife goes out of town? If you're anything like us fancy boys at Team Tiger Awesome, you wind up getting Diet Coke and gummy worms delivered to you from 7-Eleven so you don't have to put your pants on ever under any circumstances, and then you just shut it down entirely and don't see or speak to anyone for days on end. Well, the folks at ManAlone.com are here to help. ManAlone.com will send a non-judgmental representative directly to your home to check on you when your loved one is out of town. Packages vary from the sad boy, which is just a friendly reminder to take a shower, to the total monster, which is a team of registered nurses who bathe you and feed you intravenously. And if you're worried you'll literally waste away and die, go to ManAlone.com and enter promo code TIGER for a free upgrade to the premium Widowmaker package. For more about ManAlone.com, be sure to check out the Team Tiger Awesome show every Sunday from Podcast One, right here on the Jericho Network.
ManAlone.com sounds like it has some promise. I think the Team Tiger Awesome guys are onto something with that fake ad. And to get more where that came from, just go ahead and hit subscribe on iTunes and please leave them a rating and a review. Do the same for the newest show on the Jericho Network, Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. Great supersized first episode this week with Andy Summers from The Police, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Paul Dean from Loverboy talking all things working for the weekend, Kiss, so many great things. Mitch is a very, very accomplished interview. He's a lot of fun. And he's going to load you up with killer music interviews every Monday. So go ahead and hit subscribe. Leave him a 5-star rating and review. I think this Monday he's got Ricky Rocket from Poison coming on. Big tour with Def Leppard coming up. And Mitch has the exclusive. Also, just a reminder, Talk is Jericho participates in the Amazon Associates program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for me to earn fees by linking to Amazon.com and affiliated sites, man. You can link it to Amazon at podcast1.com by clicking on the killer deals button at the top of the page. Go do it now. You can also find the rest of my great sponsors there, including ddpyoga.com/Jericho, where you get 30% off the DDP Yoga app and all DDPY merch. Congrats to DDP for going in the WWE Hall of Fame this Friday. Also, Lyft. You might take a Lyft to WrestleMania if you're going to be in Orlando. Sign up to drive at lyft.com/Jericho and get a $500 new driver bonus. That's lyft.com/Jericho. Also, betdsi.com. Register and use the promo code Jericho25. That's my last name. That's the number 25 to get $25 for free, plus a 200% bonus on your first deposit. Don't forget all of those great guys. Little Caesars is in there as well. Don't forget about True Car. Don't forget about Geico. We got a lot of great, great people working with us here on the Talk is Jericho and the Jericho Network. Thank you so much for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next and coming up on Friday. By popular demand, one of the most requested guests, one of the most requested people ever on Talk is Jericho, and we haven't even ever had him on. He makes his TIJ debut talking about Roman Reigns. It's been 3 years in the making. It's finally happening on Friday. And if you think you know Roman, think again. You're going to love this interview. Roman Reigns on Talk is Jericho this Friday. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How you doing?
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.